omitted from my testimony, as I was told it happened. But the next day, there was going to be a whole day dedicated to energy, and therefore I didn't repeat what was going to be said. The energy issue, a 53% increase for businesses and schools, and 30% for residences, is an absolute disaster at this time. Absolute disaster. And it's going to create a situation wherein people are going to get laid off, which starts this cycle. You know, when we talk about public-private partnerships, that's exactly what we mean. I mean, to the extent that we have a good economy and people are working, the state is in a lot better shape, and that's part of the problem we have right now. Solutions. We've had, to put it mildly, a debate, I guess you'd say, with Enron, PGE, and with the PUC on mitigating factors. We've asked for reconsideration. That's been turned down. We have asked to stretch out the increase, and so far that hasn't happened, although I understand that's under discussion. We've objected to any stretch out that then charges us interest beyond what the current rate is, which is very low, so we don't want a stretch out to be a profit center for Enron PGE at this moment. As far as tax credits are concerned, the stimulus ideas here, Representative, admittedly, by demand, were short-term solutions, 2-3 years out, with the hope that our economy would pick back up. So that was the charge that I was given, and so I hadn't really thought about tax credits on a specific issue like energy. We've been sort of approaching it on a different basis. Now, PG is going to get sold. There may be some mitigating factors in this sale that is, I think, on a fairly fast track that may reduce those rates to some extent. And probably, in the stream of things, that will be the most likely thing that will mitigate against some of these increases. I've told the senators, I'll tell you, that we've invited Mr. Wrighton, Mr. Dick Wrighton, chairman of Northwest Natural, to come to our board meeting on January 18th, and he's prepared to instruct us and make commitments. He's set commitments to the business community and everybody else at the same time. And so following that presentation on the 18th of January, I might have a snappier, more authoritative answer for you.
Thank you. One thing I would like to add, too, in relation to on the Elliott State Forest is that there is another way to maximize the money that we can take out of the Common School Trust Fund, and that's by maximizing the management of the state-owned timberlands that go into that fund more for timber production than we have been doing. And I think that that's something that the committee should consider, too, that there are, within the Oregon Forest Practices Act and the act that the private sector does forest management strategies under the auspices of, plenty of environmental considerations to protect water quality and protect wildlife habitat and fisheries habitat. And that if we were able to look at the timber-producing state-owned lands more in terms of their timber production capabilities, we could be putting more money into this Common School Trust Fund.
Correct.
Thank you very much. Mr. Buttrick, I appreciate you taking the time to talk to us today, and I call the Oregon Student Association. On deck is the Oregon Restaurant Association.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, good afternoon, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak to you. Today, my name is Justin Yettis. I am the Board Vice Chair for the Oregon Student Association and the Student Body President at Oregon State University. And the Oregon Student Association represents about 75,000 students at Oregon University System campuses, the Oregon Health Sciences University, and at Lane Community College as well. Today I want to share with you the priorities the Oregon Student Association believes are most critical to protecting students' access to quality education in the state. Today, more than ever, a person's income is directly related to their level of education. For every Oregonian who is denied the chance to receive a higher education, the state has lost an investment opportunity that will pay off in the income tax revenue the state depends on. For some students, higher costs or programs weakened by budget cuts simply means they attend school out of state, or often they don't come back. For others, though, it simply means losing the opportunity to receive a higher education. Our first priority is protecting the Oregon Opportunity Grant. It is one of the surest ways to keep the promise of access for all Oregonian students. Already underfunded, this program provides over 19,000 need-based grants a year, but still turns away about 25% of all of its qualified students. This program truly is one of the safety nets for post-secondary education. For the people at this income level, the grant is likely to mean the difference between going to school or not. Our next priority focuses on the importance of community colleges. Another trend we have seen during economic downturns is an increased demand for community college education. When the economy is weak, the community college system's mission of access to education and job training is yet even that much more critical. $45 million the legislature invested to help the community colleges keep pace with the growth is even more critical to their mission today in the recession than it was at the end of the session when the economy appeared healthy. As the state's unemployment rose, so did community college enrollment, and that can be seen in the accompanying graph that you have with you. You've already heard testimony about the student child care block grant, so I won't go into that issue much. The cut to this program in the Department of Human Services budget would replace this barrier for about 433 families. The final issue I would touch on with you today is the Oregon University System budget. At the close of last session, the legislature made access to the university system a priority by working to keep tuition increases fairly low. Just before last session, a study by the National Center for Public Policy and Higher Education published gave Oregon a D- for access to public higher education. This is due not just to the fact that Oregon has relatively high tuition, among the highest in the West, but also because of our comparatively low median income coupled with underfunded financial aid. In fact, only five other states ranked as low or lower. The last attachment you have helps illustrate this. Raising tuition to try to make up for smaller general fund contribution can drive students out of higher education. A study published in Change magazine in 1990 told us that for every $100 tuition increase, about 1% of students will no longer be able to attend school. We saw this firsthand after Measure 5. If this is coupled with a cut to financial aid, even more students could possibly be affected. And finally, to summarize, I would like to quickly address priorities within the OUS budget itself. OSA shares the opinion of the OUS board that access to instruction should be the first priority of the system. Should targeted programs become the priority, it will come at the cost of undergraduate instruction. We're all facing tough choices with few outcomes that appear positive in this process, but we would urge this committee to consider the core mission of instruction of students as you consider where to prioritize the general fund dollars coming to the system. Money going to the resource allocation model maintains quality and access of the entire system for the largest number of students. If the RAM is, again, cut to fund other initiatives, access to quality is subject to erosion over all seven of our campuses. This body has prioritized access in the past, and I hope you will again. Thank you very much. Madam Chair, be willing to answer any questions.
Thank you. Representative Winters.
Justin, just a quick question or a quick observation. I wonder if that very handsome tie that you have on is OSU.
It is. You know, I knew somebody was going to ask me about it, too. It's stick out like sore thumbs.
Well, just as one of the alum parents, I think it looks very nice.
Thank you very much.
It'd be better if it was
his last year. Still not paying for it.
This year, not next year, though.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I appreciate you taking the time to come here today. Chair calls the Oregon Restaurant Association. On deck is the Oregon Association of Area Agencies on Aging.
Madam Chair, thank you for inviting the Oregon Restaurant Association. I guess
you've been abandoned.
Yes, that's okay. My name is Kevin Cameron, and I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Restaurant Association as an individual operator here in the state of Oregon. And Mr. Perry invited me to come down and talk on behalf of the association. And what what I can really speak to is what I know from being around other operators, as most recently as Mr. McCormick from McCormick and Schmitz, and today I had lunch with Bob Rice from Go Forth and Rice in Portland. And sales in our industry, well, prior to September 11th, were off generally. And since September 11th, they vary from anywhere from restaurants being down 2 or 3% in sales this year down to 25, 30% in some of the finer dining restaurants. And I guess as a concern, I have a lot of respect for each one of you that's in this position as a business person, facing whenever I face revenue or we face revenue shortfalls. We've got tough decisions to make all the time. And being a company that really puts our employees first, our customers and our employees first, we're always trying to find ways that we can maintain their quality of life, and in fact adding benefits in the last year such as insurance and retirement plans. I think those things are all things that have to be considered, but the bottom line is that we have to operate within our family budget that we have, and I understand the things that you're facing. From a business person standpoint, some things that would be concerning to our industry, increased taxes. An industry of very small margins with facing decreasing revenues at this point in time would be would put to death in a lot of small entrepreneurs that are trying to make make it in a tight industry to begin with. If there are some things, and I've been thinking about this personally for quite a while, there's some things that I think of we added in the last year. We added health insurance benefits to our employees that average 30 hours a week or more, and some of those people we pay 100%, some we pay 50% of that benefit. If there were some things that were added, such as tax credits for employers who offer health insurance, I keep hearing about how important that is to our state and the Oregon Health Plan for small businesses that have less than a certain amount of employees that offer that benefit. They get a straight tax credit. If there are some taxes that you need to look at, make sure that you offer some incentives that would really help the small business person out there. Offer things to their people that would be beneficial to our economy and to the well-being of the people who live in this state. That's probably what I would say the most is most important. The last comment I would make is that having a revenue shortfall in business or in your position of leadership, there's nothing that falls short of being a tough leader right now. And you're going to have to make some decisions, and I support you in those decisions. I wouldn't want to be in your seat, but just be good leaders and let people know. And I've heard a lot of different people testify here of not taking their money, but reality is the money's not there. And reality is we have to step up to the plate and tell people that they're going to have to sacrifice. And if that means from us sitting around this table taking a cut in pay on our salaries, if that means state employees taking a little cut in pay, if that means teachers taking a cut in pay, if that means everybody around us, whatever that form of cut in pay is, giving something back to the system during this short time, I think that relies on leadership from us and from representatives in our area to go out and talk to our people and say, this is tough times. There's no way around it. And we have to do that in our businesses, and I encourage you to, in any way, be able to communicate that back to your people. I don't know what Bill Perry wanted to say, but I'll tell you the what I know about the restaurant industry, whatever questions you might have.
Well, we also have a restaurant industry expert here on the committee.
She's probably saying that they hear from me a lot.
Yeah, but your butt's not dirty like mine, Jackie. You haven't been in the restaurant falling on the floor today like I have.
That's because I've been here listening. but I do think you are correct that our industry is probably the first to be hit when there is a declining economy. And for our industry, it does range from 2 to 30% in revenue shortfall. And I'm pleased that you raised the point, because I don't think that everybody understands that the restaurant industry, we do try very hard to offer health insurance and other benefits to our employees. And we do agonize, really agonize, if we have to let somebody go because of a revenue shortfall, because in our industry, they're just like our family.
Absolutely.
You made another observation that I think I had commented earlier, because I asked the Secretary of State's office when you talked about leadership, and I recalled when in the ATIA years that we did just that, that the salaries were frozen, the leadership took cuts, and it came from it started from the governor's office and worked its way throughout the state system to demonstrate the severity of the problem and also to demonstrate that we're all in this boat together and that we all have to make the necessary sacrifices in order to balance the budget. So I'm glad that you brought that point up.
And I would encourage to do that quickly, not wait, because we know it's ticking right now.
Representative Butler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just quickly, I'd like to have Kevin go back to the Restaurant Association and bring us a list of other issues that they would like to see us, that they would like to see that would help us be able to provide the method of bridging these kinds of budget issues. Appreciate the comment about providing a tax credit for those companies who help us get people off of the Oregon Health Plan. Thank you.
Well, we've tried every session on our tip credits, so if you want us to bring that back, we've done that. We're the highest in the nation.
Labor costs.
Labor costs. And so when you try the labor costs and combine for benefits both those issues, we can't do both. And most of our employees would prefer to have the benefits. Most of our employees that you're talking about, often single moms with kids who would rather have health insurance. But, you know, we're in a position where you only have so many dollars that some of us can't do both as much as we would love to do both.
Thank you.
I would also just like to add that a great many of us, especially during the interim, are dependent on your facility for our sustenance, and we appreciate very much.
You're welcome. I haven't been there but one day this week, and my wife's been there, and I saw Art just before I came up here, and they are just like you, just wagging their tails right now. They doubled their business, more than doubled their business this week with just one extra employee, and that's just the kind of people that we have, I know, within our company and you have within your districts, is that when times are tough, you know, we just can get in there and rally the troops, and I think that's really what needs to happen. And I guess I haven't, from a citizen in this state, I really would like to see that. I haven't seen anybody coming out and saying, hey, things are upside down right now and we got to do something about it. And all you do is read about how bad it is and what, you know, what's going to happen. And I think we need to be proactive versus reactive. And if that message doesn't start right now, when it finally, because we've got to prepare people for the change. When the change comes, it's going to be even worse. So I would encourage you in whatever way you can to get a message out right now that we're all going to have to contribute to this, whether it's a little bit of increased taxes or whether it's decrease in pays or benefits or what have you. But I think, you know, Freightliner, they agreed, you know, even through their union, to take a cut in pay and a cut in benefits to stay in business. Walt Disney World, all the employees volunteered to take a cut so that they can maintain each other. And, you know, our teachers, if they don't understand that, then something else is going to happen. And if people within the state government don't understand that, and we do that with our employees, we say, hey, everybody's going to have to take an hour or two cut this week, or we got to let one person go here. And you know, we just need to send that message that we're all in this together, and don't point any fingers. And somebody's got to lead that charge. And
thank
I'm
you
not
very
sure
much.
Who that is.
I appreciate you taking
thank
time
you.
Off from your business to come here.
Oh, he did fall.
That was the mop bucket.
Yeah.
Chair calls the Oregon The Oregon Association of Area Agencies
and Disabilities.
And it's 4AD, isn't that awful long?
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Jacqueline Zimmer, director of O4AD. And I understand that my popularity increases with the shortness of my presentation, so.
Let it be known that you are the last one that's here to testify that we know of. Yeah. So
it's very similar to last night. But thank you very much. I'm also the co-chair of the Human Services Coalition of Oregon, and as a courtesy to you, because you've had so many people testify before me on all the reductions in the human services budget that were laid out, I will not go through each of the items listed on the 63 pages that the Department of Human Services I'm getting more popular, right? I just want you to know that I've just given you some handouts, and I think most of you are familiar with things like Oregon Project Independence, Medicaid services for peoples in levels 1 through 17. And what I've done is, on this blue sheet here, I've just kind of tried to help people understand what levels 1 through 17 means. And really what you need to know is 1 is a significantly impaired, probably should be in a nursing home, you know, 1 to 3 and 1 to 4, but still probably living at home. And then the further down you go, the less impaired you are. But essentially, almost every one of these people qualifies under Medicaid to enter a nursing home. And so anything that we can do to keep them in their own homes is, of course, saving us money. Keep them off of Medicaid is saving money. Something to keep in mind on OPI is there's planned reductions for the whole program, and the department has said to you, well, a number of these people will come back into Medicaid, and Medicaid will pick up the tab for them. That's true, perhaps, for the 50 to 60% that are at levels 1 through 10. But keep in mind, levels 11 through 17 face elimination in the Medicaid side. See what I'm saying? There's a possibility that you'll eliminate levels 15 to 17 and 11 through 14 under Medicaid. So those OPI people that are at 10 and above that might be eligible for Medicaid fairly soon would not necessarily have Medicaid to go to. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I wanted you to be aware of that. And, of course, the reductions in OPI, there have been reductions in OPI for several sessions. We're nowhere near the funding that we used to have for that. So something else to keep in mind. And then I also just included some brief stories about some people in Multnomah County and a list of all of the reductions that we see in senior and disabled services that are very disconcerting to us. And I don't think I need to tell you that Oregon has an incredibly rapid growth of seniors, 85 and older. I think we've been through all of this just 6 months ago. And that we have the same number of people in nursing homes today that we did 10 years ago. And that's because we've created this in-home care system and this cottage industry of foster homes. If we didn't have that system, we would create it in times of economic crisis. But we created it as a value system. And so that's why it's in place, and why anything that's done to eliminate services in home are really they're not going to make any sense for us financially. So I'm going to go ahead and stop because I think you heard from a lot of great people, and you know how to reach me if you have any questions. But I'll sit around if you have any now.
Thank you very
okay.
much.
Okay, thank you. You're very welcome.
We have three more people that were invited to testify, the Oregon Association for Home Care, the Oregon Alliance of Children's Programs, and the Associated Builders and Contractors. If there's anyone here to testify on behalf of those three groups, would they please come forward?
Madam Chair, while you're waiting on those folks to come rushing forward, I just took an opportunity in my school district. Superintendents have been in touch with me as to the pages of requirements. I've shot copies of the 14 pages of requirements, mandates for our school districts, as Appendix A through E of the mandates on K-12s that we do require. Many of them just single-spaced pages of the requirements that we have for each of the school districts. And again, my school superintendents have asked us, if you need to cut, please give us at least a commensurate opportunity to cut some of the mandates, and then if you do more mandate cuts, then we'll divert that back into the classroom and teacher instruction time. So this is something I think that we certainly need to discuss as we move forward.
Representative Butler, I would be interested in having that document entered into the permanent record of the committee. So if you would give that to the committee administrator.
Certainly will.
And we could have copies made for the members and forwarded to us along with anything that's accumulated in public input. I would be very happy.
And it certainly is available over the Internet, and that's how they shipped it to me, was just by the Internet site. So I will go ahead and give it to the administrator now.
Thank you very much. The committee members, this brings us to the end of our odyssey here. We have heard from all of the scheduled and invited testimonies at this point. And if anyone would like to make any closing comments, the chair would entertain those comments. Representative Starr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd just like to reiterate the three laws of a recession that were presented to us, I believe, yesterday by Jim Johnson about recession. One, the recession will end. Two, that you both got to cut and invest during a recession. And then market share shifts on the upswing. I think that we as a legislative body ought to take to heart those three laws as we look to the opportunity that faces us in the next 6 to 8 weeks.
Thank you. And having no further business before this committee, the committee is...
Madam Chair, I apologize. I was not here at the opening of our hearing this morning, but have we discussed what our work product or report...
Excellent point. We met over the noon hour with legislative, fiscal, and with the committee administrators. And what appears to be a work product that we can get out in a short time frame, which was very much a consideration. We wanted to give people the results of our information gathering process. The Legislative Fiscal Office will make available on the web the documentation that they handed out to us at the beginning of this process. They're also in the process right now of drawing up a synopsis of the testimony from the state agencies. The committee assistants are in the process of drawing together a document that will delineate the testimony that we received in the invited testimony and the public testimony. What I asked them to specifically zero in on were suggestions that we received in that testimony for either rebalance or revenue enhancement or any concrete suggestions in how to complete this process that we're embarked upon. They will try to have that document ready by the end of next week, which is when Legislative Fiscal has committed to have their document ready. So you should see that emerging from the process on a longer time frame than that. Will be the minutes that Andrew's been taking of this process, but that's going to be a rather lengthy document and probably with a lot more information in it than we can sort through given the time frame that we have to work on.
So thank you, Madam Chair. I just was concerned that since we hadn't deliberated and we've had recommendations up the wazoo, that it would be very difficult to actually prioritize or put any kind of support behind any of them, but it sounds like this is going to be basically a compilation of what we have heard from various interest groups and the agencies.
Well, and the charge that this committee was given did not involve prioritizing or recommending. It was an information gathering exercise.
Okay. And I just would like to thank you, and I'm sure many members here, that for leading what has been a very challenging task and doing it grace, humor, and good organization.
I very much appreciate that, but I also want to have it on the record that I could not have done it without very great cooperation from the members of this committee and without outstanding service from the staff also.
Yes.
And with that, the committee is adjourned.
Oh, I just want.